What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
All right, what's going on? Welcome back from a holiday weekend. Big week coming up. We got two projection shows. We got a live mock draft with listeners, and as always, we're going to be reading your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. It is Tuesday, or late morning, I guess, 10:30 a.m. Eastern here. I'm Adam Azer with three analysts today, Heath Cummings and Chris Towers. We're going to be looking at their projections. Jamie Eisenberg is going to be giving his thoughts as well. Got to wish Chris Towers a happy birthday, though. Happy belated, Chris. Sorry I didn't text you on your birthday at midnight.
Oh, it's okay. I was deep into a 5-hour karaoke session.
Really?
At that point, so that
would have been, I set off some fireworks to celebrate.
Yeah,
you know, I was about 9 before I figured out that everyone was lying when they said all the fireworks were for me. But I appreciate you, continuing the tradition. Thank you.
It took really a long time for you to figure that out. Chris's birthday.
I was a really gullible kid. Okay.
And Jamie's here as well. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning. Happy birthday, Chris.
Thank you.
And happy 4th of July to everyone out there, even though it's July 6th. Hope it was a great, great weekend. I made awful cheeseburgers, but other than that, everything was great. Scott Fishbowl is underway. Who has made more than 3 picks?
I'm in round 6.
No way.
Wow.
Turbo Scott Fishbowl.
I have made 1 pick.
1 pick. 3 for me. Heath, how about you?
2.
Two. Dose. All right. All right. All right, Jamie, what do you got so far? What pick did you have?
I had the 5th pick. So I started with Kelce and Tannehill before the reversal. I was thrilled to get Kelce at 5.
Kelce 5. Wow.
Yeah. We started 3 quarterbacks in a row. Went Mahomes, Allen, Kyler with our first 3 picks. The great Eric Young, who, as I told you on the live show when we did the Scott Fishbowl mock draft, picking in front of me, he got McCaffrey at 4. So he didn't get Derrick Henry as he did in our mock draft. And then I took Kelce. So I took Tannehill to screw him over because I know he wanted Tannehill. He was the last of my top 10 quarterbacks available. So quarterbacks went really flying off the board there. And then I went, I've taken 3 running backs in a row. So I went Kelce, Tannehill, Akers, Dobbins, Gaskin.
Kelce, Tannehill, Akers. A lot of running backs there. Okay. So this is a super flex league. So QBs go really early. It's also tight end premium. So tight ends get a huge boost. That's why Kelce is often going to be a top 3 pick. He was in my league, and he was in Chris's league.
I think I saw a few leagues he went 1.
Yep. I could see it.
Yeah, I took him 2.
Yep.
Okay. So, Chris, what's your team so far?
Travis Kelce at number 2. We've already someone removed from our league for timing out on their first pick. It has not gone well in the Beyonce division so far.
Oh, man. And Heath, how about you?
I had the 10th pick, which was not very much fun for the first 2 picks, but it's about ready to be more fun. I took Dak Prescott in the first as the 6th quarterback off the board. And then by far my most controversial pick, probably the whole draft, I took Aaron Jones with the 3rd pick in the 2nd round ahead of Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott and Jonathan Taylor.
Wow. And I had the 4th pick. And Chris, Heath was saying it's about to get a lot more fun for him with the 10th pick. That's because there's a 3rd round reversal It does not snake in the third round. It snakes after that. But basically, if you have the, let's say, the 12th pick, you have 12, 13, and then 25. So
it's great to be at the end.
Yeah.
The more I think about it, it's really great to be at the, because there's so many good players. All the quarterbacks go early.
Right, right. And I had the 4th pick. I took Dalvin Cook over Darren Waller, which is a very tough decision because Waller outscored Cook in this format last year. But I took Cook, and then I took Brady, and then I got Mark Andrews with the 33rd pick, which I was pretty happy about.
Yeah. Okay. How high did Pitts go on yours?
I think he's still on the board. No, I'm sorry. He went 3 picks before Andrews.
Yeah.
4 picks. He went 29th. And then Goddard, 2 picks later.
He went 14th in mine.
It's crazy. Premium. No, people are in love.
Three picks after George Kittle. It's funny, Adam, the guy who has the 4th pick in my league also started with Dalvin Cook and Tom Brady.
Really? All right. I'm pretty happy about it. I love Brady, and we'll tell you why. We're going to do Tampa Bay Buccaneers passing game projections. First, some intro questions about your projections. Heath and Chris both doing them this year. And what was your toughest projection, Heath? We'll start with you. Your toughest projection. And we're just, if you could, stick with the NFC. This is our NFC show. Tomorrow, AFC.
Just the entire Philadelphia Eagles offense. Everything about them. You've got a couple of coaches, the head coach and offensive coordinator, who come from systems in Indianapolis and with the Chargers, where the head coach, Frank Reich and Anthony Lynn, have a lot. If they don't call the plays, they have a very heavy influence on that. So I don't know that we have a great idea of exactly what type of offense they'll run. That's more complicated by the fact that they have a quarterback who played 3.5 games last year, and they either ran it with him a dozen times or he threw it 45 times, depending on the game script. So, and then you've got these question marks about Miles Sanders' workload and how much they want to use him as even a semi-feature back. And then you've got a rookie wide receiver. Zach Ertz is still on the roster. It's that offense as a whole is just a major struggle for me, and I don't have a great deal of confidence in a projection for any of them.
Chris, what was your toughest projection?
I think it probably has to be New Orleans, just because there are such widely disparate potential outcomes for the skill players on that team based on who the quarterback is, and we really don't have any reason to believe that either Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill is more likely than the other one to be the quarterback. So I kind of just had to make a copy of the tab in my spreadsheet and just keep two going, just so I can at least keep them in my mind what I expect, you know, if Jameis is the quarterback versus Taysom Hill, because, you know, you're probably looking at at least a 50 pass attempt, if not more, difference between the two of them. You're probably looking at a different pace of play depending on who the quarterback is and just how much they're going to use Alvin Kamara based on which guy is under center. It's just figuring out what that's going to look like, figuring out how much it's going to look like the Drew Brees offense is really, really difficult. This is, you know, two players in the top 25 or 30 picks in most drafts. So it's really, really important to get it right. Mm-hmm. And it might be the hardest to get right now.
Jamie, if there's an NFC team that would give you fits in terms of rankings, who would it be?
Well, I think they hit on two of them, obviously. With the all the change in Philadelphia, with, as he said, you know, the lack of the lack of knowledge that we have of what Jalen Hurts will do over a full season with better targets, and then New Orleans with the quarterback situation. Trying to think if there's a third one. You know, I guess it would probably be the two teams that could start rookie quarterbacks, you know, with Chicago and San Francisco, just because of what could happen with those two teams, you know, knowing that obviously Lance seems to be a much different quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo, and what that offense could look like with just a different passer there, different from, you know, the CJ Bethards of the world as well. And then obviously if Chicago does, you know, start Justin Fields, or at least gives him the start from week two on, so Matt Nagy saves face with the proclamation that he made of Andy Dalton's our week one starter, you know, how that team will look as well, you know, so there's, you know, the rookie quarterbacks probably will change some things clearly with those two rosters.
Yeah. And that's my next question is, how did you go about projecting the teams that could start rookie quarterbacks at some point in the season? Chris, what did you do specifically with Chicago and San Francisco? Do you project them for a combination of quarterbacks, or what do you do there?
Right now I've got Fields for Chicago, Garoppolo for San Francisco, but that's another one where at some point pretty soon I'm just going to have to create a separate tab.
What about Kyle Shanahan for San Francisco? Did you see the video of him throwing the football on 4th of July?
Still looks good.
Looks good.
Might have to move him up my rankings.
Looks good.
You mean on Chris's birthday?
Of his life.
Huh?
You mean throwing a football on Chris's birthday?
On Chris's birthday, yes. He threw from one rooftop to the other and looked pretty impressive.
I think he's cool. I'd like to hang out with him.
If you saw the video, you'd like to hang out with him. Looked a little toasty and dropped an F-bomb after he hit the throw.
Really?
does that add to the hangout appeal for Adam?
No.
Football coaches, they're just like us.
No, I cannot stand hanging out with inebriated people. I hate it. Oh, gosh.
So Adam doesn't want to hang out.
Speaking of which, we got Nando on Tuesday night.
Last night I had to tell the story on a different podcast of Nando's last day, which was last show, which was always a fun story.
Yes, I told the same story, and I told them to ask you about that story.
Yeah, I actually don't really like telling the story that much because when you can't say what the bleeps were, it's not that great of a story. All right, Heath, what about you? How did you project the Niners and the Bears?
So far, exactly like what Chris said. I probably lean more towards changing the San Francisco one if things go really well for Lance than I do the Chicago one. I just can't believe they're going to make it very long into the season starting Andy Dalton over Justin Fields. But
yeah, that's the thing for me is like, I think Garoppolo is better than Andy Dalton. And so I think there's a better chance that if Garoppolo starts the season at quarterback, he hangs on to the job than it does Dalton.
And the conventional wisdom before the draft was that Justin Fields was more ready than Trey Lance immediately. Maybe not as much upside, but.
Right. And then there's we're probably thinking the Bears, give them credit. They've had quarterback disaster for a while. They still managed to end up with pretty good teams, but we probably think the Niners are going to be better than the Bears. It's harder to make a quarterback change when your team is successful, unless you're the Dolphins. So that's another factor there. Tonight, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, come join us for a live mock draft with Nando DeFino and some others from around the industry. We're going to be live on the Fantasy Football Today YouTube channel at 7 p.m. And we're also giving away Fantasy Football Today merchandise, so you definitely want to be there for this one. 7 p.m. at YouTube.
As part of the Scott Fishbowl.
Yes. Great giveaways tonight. YouTube.com/FantasyFootballToday. Adam Rank, Joe Pisapia, and Nando DeFino are all joining us. Hit the subscribe button, YouTube.com/FantasyFootballToday. We're going to be live at 7 o'clock, but if you subscribe, you'll know exactly when we're going live. All right, we'll see you there. Some quick news and notes. There have been a lot of reports, beat writers coming out with speculation, and the Niners backfield's been part of it. There was one article in The Athletic with two different 49ers writers, and one of them said Raheem Mostert should be the starting running back when healthy. And then Matt Barrows, another writer for The Athletic, said they want to run the ball more than 500 times, and he expects Trey Sermon to get a lot of carries. Jamie, did you come up with any big takeaways from what has been written recently in The Athletic about the Niners backfield?
I never anticipated Raheem Mostert not being the starter. I think even when they drafted Sermon and as good as Jeff Wilson finished last year, that Mostert would be the guy that they would give the first carry to. You have to expect that they're going to rotate guys. That's what they've been doing. You have to expect that Mostert might deal with an injury at some point. That's happened to him more times than not over the course of his career, which has been a problem for him. Some of the stops that, he's been able to stick with some teams, but he's still their most talented running back going into the season. Sermon may prove to be that guy by the end of the year, but the fact that that Mostert has fallen to the spot that he's fallen to, as a mid-round pick, I think is going to be one of the bigger steals, because if he stays healthy, he's going to be a very productive fantasy option. He's not going to catch the ball very much. We know that. But still, in this offense, how they run the ball, if the quarterback situation does improve, could be even better. But this is still one of the best running teams that we're going to see in the league. And Mostert's going to be the first guy to get the crack at the full-time job.
And the 500 rush attempts is a lot, but also with the 17 games, just running back rush attempts alone, they were on pace for 453 over a 17-game season 2 years ago and 420 last year. So they've always been, if they want to run the ball just a little bit more, maybe that's a word of caution against the pass catchers, because they were already a very run-heavy team.
That's the thing about doing a process like putting together projections, and that's one of the things I thought about with this team in particular. Was it's really easy to get excited about Brandon Ayuk. It's really easy to get excited about George Kittle. Less excitement about Debo Samuel, but once you actually start adding everything together, it can be kind of hard to make all those guys work as, you know, the value where they're being drafted.
Yeah. Of course.
And especially so if they run the ball more.
Especially, and again, we don't know if this will change, but because nobody ever has had more than I always forget if it's five or six. I think six touchdown catches under Kyle Shanahan. It's really weird. So, you know.
Yeah, Kittle's never had more than five.
Kittle's never had more than five. I don't know if anyone's had more than five under Shanahan in those four seasons. It's definitely not more than
in
six.
San Francisco,
yeah. In San Francisco, yeah. Definitely not more than six. Let's get a couple of Chargers notes, Heath. Dave actually mentioned this when he was talking about Justin Herbert, but we kind of glossed over it. Brandon Staley, the head coach, he says he wants the offense to run through Justin Herbert. I'm not sure if that's news or not.
Well, it better.
Well, look, he could say, well, I want to be a run team.
No, it's that'd be the stupidest thing to say ever.
All right, then it's not news. That's fine.
There's one note I saw. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast, but, you know, Mike Lombardi being a New Orleans Saints guy, there's been a lot of talk.
Joe Lombardi,
yeah. Sorry, that they would want to go with, you know, that they want to run a similar offense to what the Saints have. I think Jared Cook said it's like 40% of the offense is overlapping with the Saints, and that's more true in the passing game than the running game. So I think that's an interesting thing about the Saints offense and what that could potentially mean, or the Chargers offense and what that could potentially mean for Keenan Allen, who, you know, just like Michael Thomas, great route runner, excels in the short and intermediate area. You know, he could be in line for maybe his best season ever.
Except the problem with that is that they're talking about Mike Williams playing that role.
Oh, they did say Mike Williams going to play the X, but yep. He doesn't run the same types of routes either. It's confusing because I don't think that they'll just have Mike Williams run Michael Thomas routes. That seems like, but
no,
I do think Mike Williams should be expected to have a career high in targets from everything they've said.
Right. This is if you take anything away from the Charger stuff, there's two things. I don't know if you're going to bring up the running back situation, but the two things, one would be is that Mike Williams is probably getting a little too underrated based on where he's been going. If this is going to be the opportunity for him, I think a lot of people look at the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't pick up his fifth year option. So, you know, it's like, are they moving on from? To me, he's this year's Devontae Parker, Corey Davis. He's that guy. You know, it's the same setup. You know, failed first round pick who hasn't lived up to expectations that could have a career year out the door. For Parker, he stayed in Miami, but, you know, it was the same setup. The running back situation, Adam, if you want to introduce the news, I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. The Sports Illustrated's Fernando Ramirez thinks Justin Jackson's roster spot could be on the bubble. So the number two running back behind Austin Eckler is fairly valuable. And something that you're going to draft late. So I had been thinking it would be Justin Jackson, but now I might have to pivot from that, Jamie.
Well, it you know, the way that he framed it was he basically took, the writer took the draft capital point of view, that Kelly was a fourth round pick last year, I think.
Yeah.
And Larry Roundtree was a sixth round pick this year. And that those two guys are they're more invested in those two guys as opposed to Justin Jackson, who was a seventh round pick a few years ago. And I forget the other guys that they listed. So, you know, he did write in the story, in the breakdown of it, that Jackson, if he has a strong training camp, will easily be on the roster, but that they'll still be competing for those backup touches or those secondary touches behind Austin Eckler. So it's certainly something to keep an eye on. But for, you know, best ball drafts, for dynasty moves that you're looking at, Kelly seems to be a little bit more firmer entrenched on the team right now, according to some reports out of Los Angeles, if you're just looking at it from what the writers are saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably their preference would be that they don't have to carry Justin Jackson anymore. But for that to happen, Kelly or Roundtree is going to have to be better than him.
And Roundtree's a little bit more of a physical guy, you know, so he's a different running back than the other two. Kelly is somebody that can probably play a little bit more of Eckler's role if they needed him to. Obviously, Justin Jackson as well. Obviously, they don't want to have that situation arise as they did last year when Eckler missed time. But, you know, if it is the Saints offense, if it is what Eckler has been, Eckler is in line for a monster season, you know, just as the pass catching running back in this offense. And if you look at what he was able to do once he came back from the injury playing with Justin Herbert, it was fantastic. So there's a lot to like about Austin Eckler this season.
And finally, Josh Gordon applied for reinstatement. He's now 30 years old. He did not play in 2020. Does anybody see a reason to put him on a dynasty roster, Josh Gordon, or any roster?
if your rosters are deep enough, if you can put him in an IR spot or, you know, stash him, it's not a bad flyer to take. But I mean, we've been down this road how many times since, what, 2012?
Right.
You know, it's just an unfortunate situation. Hopefully he gets his life together. Hopefully he gets a chance to play. Obviously, as the sports world is, you know, discussing marijuana and suspensions for it and, you know, substance abuse, it's a evolving conversation as, you know, the track and field world is dealing with. So, you know, hopefully Josh Gordon's life gets back on track. He gets another shot at the NFL and he's able to play.
All right, let's get into our projections. Here we go. So there's so many projections, obviously. They're projecting every relevant player in the NFL. Couldn't go through all of them. I picked one per division. I'm going to start with the NFC North here. And remember, these are just NFC projections. And David Montgomery, who Chris has for 290 carries, Heath has for just 246. And these are all 17-game projections for everyone, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 246, not a lot. And Heath also has him at 4 yards per carry and Chris at 4.3 yards per carry. Really, I mean, look, Chris has David Montgomery projected for 1,246 rushing yards and Heath at just 986. It's a pretty big difference. Chris, you're more confident in the workload and the production for Montgomery.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you look at a couple differences between us. One is I think Montgomery's going to be a little more efficient. I think that's just, you know, I'm not sure what the difference is there, but I'm regressing him more towards, you know, the 2020 numbers and league average 2019. He was so inefficient in 2019 that it feels safe to not entirely write that off because he did do it, but, you know, to assume that he's going to be better than that. And then I think the biggest difference is just how we're projecting the split between runs and passes for this team. I would expect if Justin Fields is the quarterback, they're going to throw a lot less than they would otherwise, and certainly than they have in the past couple of years. And maybe that's a faulty assumption. I'm totally open to the idea, but I haven't Fields projected for 547 pass attempts. Heath has him for 607. So, you know, I think that explains much of the difference.
Heath?
Yeah. And I listen, I think Justin Fields is probably the most accurate passer that Matt Nagy's ever had in Chicago. And I don't know, like, I don't necessarily think they're going to be a good team. So I think game script will lend itself more towards passing. And Nagy has had a problem the last couple of years of saying, yes, I know I need to run the ball more, and then going out and calling 45 pass attempts the next game. So as far as the run pass splits, I've got them projected for a slightly higher run rate than they have had in the last three seasons.
But that's probably more Fields than anything.
Right. And I've got Fields and Tariq Cohen and Damian Williams combined for about 165, 170 rush attempts. So that's a main reason why you don't see quite as many for Montgomery. But 246 does seem a little bit low as well. The problem is, where do you have him projected in terms of in your rankings, Chris?
He is RB19 in PPR, 17 and 9. So okay. Are we not that far off?
I've got him 21 and 22.
Yeah, you're the lowest on him, Heath. Jamie, you're kind of in the middle. And I think Dave is slightly the highest. But everybody's got him in the 18 to 22-ish range.
Stat for Montgomery if you want, just fantasy points.
Of course.
So he's played 19
games. We're not really
games.
Interested in those here.
He's played 19 games with Tariq Cohen, both healthy. He averages just 10.7 PPR points per game.
Yeah, but that's pretty much all year one. Right?
Only I can only give you the numbers that I have.
Yeah,
I can't tell you what's going to be in year four.
Right. But do you care about that? I guess that's my follow-up. Do you care?
I care. I care that he's got somebody that takes him off the field and the thing that really helped him last year.
I do think that, like, and it's not, I don't know how much different Chris and I are on Tariq Cohen's workload, but that will have a huge impact. If Tariq Cohen is not the same guy and they phase him out and it just goes back to what they did last year with David Montgomery, then Montgomery is going to be a top 12 running back and a great value in drafts. If Tariq Cohen gets the same workload that he did the prior two seasons, then I'm not sure David Montgomery can deliver top 20 production.
And it's also, you know, look, we don't know what Damian Williams is going to do. You know, what his role is going to be. If he's going to make the team, you know, I mean, he's a year older. He's a year removed from football. He's, you know, going to a coach he's familiar with. He played with Nagy in Kansas City, but, you know, it's still, can he still be that impact type player that we saw with the Chiefs, even as a role player, you know? So, I think Montgomery, you know, projections aside, it's you know, where he's being drafted, you know, and I think that's the tricky part with him, because he's going to end up, I think, if people just continue to push him down, a great, great pick.
Well, so give me the rounds that you think he, because right now
I wouldn't take him before round four.
You
would,
right.
You know, I mean, I've seen him around three, you know, I see people get excited. Like he went in the fishbowl. I could tell you what pick he was, but you know, like the check group was like, oh my God, great pick. I love that. And I was like, oh, okay.
yeah, people are gonna split on him.
He went with the last pick in round four. So, but he went ahead of Dobbins, Carson, Swift. Or maybe I'm looking at this wrong with the reversal. I'm not sure. Edwards-Helaire. I'm looking at the grid format. I'm sorry.
So that's 64th overall.
You can't really take much away from that, sure, because tight end premium, it's super flex. Let me tell you where he's going.
He went after those guys. That was with the reversal.
Rank these players. This is where he's going with.
So I think that's a fine spot for him.
All right. Hold on. Rank these players, right? Because this is where he's going in NFC ADP, which is half PPR. Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, Chris Carson, Josh Jacobs.
The only one I'd put ahead of him is Carson.
Yeah, Carson, Montgomery, Sanders, you said
Jacobs.
Jacobs, right? Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jacobs fourth for me.
Yeah, I think I have it Carson, Jacobs, Sanders, Montgomery.
Oh, wow. And then what about ETN?
Behind
all of them, man.
Okay. All right. One thing I'll point out about Montgomery is the schedule, right? Last year, anyway, it seemed like almost all of his good matchups were late, and he crushed them. But we always talk about that. Oh, he had this great schedule down the stretch. What we don't talk about is that he had a pretty hard schedule before that. In his first nine games, he faced four teams that were top five against running backs. He faced five teams that were top eight against running backs. He had a couple of easy matchups, and he did pretty well in one of them. But, you know, it was so concentrated. The schedule was so kind of very hard early and then very easy late. All right, let's go to our next projection here, and that is the Seahawks wide receivers, because last year Tyler Lockett actually had more targets than DK Metcalf. You both have them basically tied in targets. Heath, you have Metcalf at 130. You have them tied, 133 apiece. Chris, you have Lockett at 126 and Metcalf at 124. I just did a profile on Metcalf with Jacob Gibbs. It aired on Fantasy Football Today in 5, and one thing that he liked was that late in the season, Metcalf it seemed to Jacob that Metcalf started to overtake Lockett in terms of targets. And look, I guess it just depends on where you start your sample. But if you look at the last seven games, including the postseason, Metcalf had 63 targets and Lockett had 48. Metcalf had a 28% target share, Lockett 21.5% target share. That's the last six regular season games plus the one playoff game. Heath, does that matter to you? Because that's a big thing for Jacob, I know. You've obviously projected them for the same amount of targets, so maybe you didn't see anything that leads you to believe that Metcalf's going to overtake Lockett in that area.
And like, when this is a thing, because we have a lot of these, we've talked about it a lot with the rookie running backs, we've talked about it in a variety of ways. When this is a thing, that's usually where I miss, because for the most part, I generally think what happens over the full season, unless there's something that caused the change that we know about, or there's somebody talking about the change that can confirm it for us, I lean more heavily on what happened over the full season. A 16 or 17 game season, even if you include the playoffs, a full 20 games is such a small sample size that it gets more dangerous when you start dividing it up, I think. But there are times where that does point to something happening. I just generally would like to have something else to confirm it, some other reason for it happening, or some other confirmation from a coach or a player that it did happen.
And I would say it really is ultimately in this case about arbitrary endpoints, because yeah, the last seven games, including the playoffs, Metcalf had a much larger role, but that also includes the fact that Lockett got four targets in week 12 and Metcalf got 13. If you start it
but Lockett,
the week before, it's a lot closer. If you just do the last eight games of the regular season,
it's
Lockett had one more target. So it's, right. it's unless something happened, like Heath said, unless something happened between week 11 and week 12, you know, like there wasn't a bye, there wasn't, you know, it's hard to put much stock into it. That's not to say that it doesn't have value, but generally speaking, full season statistics are more predictive than half season statistics. And I also, there's the fact that, you know, during that final seven game stretch of the regular season, it's not like the passing offense was humming. You know, it's not like they made a change in philosophy and all of a sudden things got much better. And you can point to that and say, well, maybe they'll try to continue working in that way. We don't really have that here. We do have Metcalf being better than Lockett last season. But I just think given the type of players that they are, you know, Metcalf's going to be better, but I think Lockett's still going to get close to the same target share.
So that's the one other thing is I did actually start the offseason off, I think, with Metcalf continuing to grow and taking a little more of the targets from Lockett. I readjusted that with all the talk coming out of Seattle about how that much they're trying to get the ball out of Lockett's hands quicker. Because I do think, like, if you look at the types of routes they've succeeded on so far in their careers, Lockett is better on those short area targets. And he gets targeted a lot more on those short area targets. And so I think that there's a chance that the offensive philosophy change could lead to more targets for Lockett.
And Jamie, what do you think about the targets, Lockett and Metcalf?
I wouldn't be surprised if they're close. But I also think, you know, Heath just brought up where I think a lot of people are leaning is that you're hoping Metcalf takes that leap. You're hoping that the next evolution of DK Metcalf as he enters his third season is that the route tree expands, that, you know, what he's been sort of complaining about, you know, secondary to Russell Wilson, which kind of gets overlooked because he's a wide receiver and not a quarterback, is that, you know, he said that the offense got stagnant, you know, and I think that's kind of been the underlying theme of what the Seahawks offseason has been, is that, you know, change of coordinator is going to bring about some, you know, differences in how things are done, that they're not just throwing the ball down the field and they are letting their wide receivers do some different things with the ball. Now, if I'm the Seahawks and I see Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, I would want to get the ball in DK Metcalf's hands more because he's just a physical freak. And so, you know, the more touches he gets, the better that team will probably be. So I think DK Metcalf has a higher ceiling. So I would hope that the targets are a little bit more slanted in his favor. 27% to 21, probably not that much. Like you said, Adam, down the stretch, but, you know, maybe 25-21, you know, something a little bit closer, but still in Metcalf's favor. He deserves the ball more. He should get the ball more. But Lockett's ending up, you know, just to be a great value pick. You know, you just have to deal with some of the highs and lows because that's the player he's been. You know, if you just look at the sample size, as Heath alluded to, over the course of his career, you know, it's not just last year. I mean, that's just kind of the player he's been. You know, he'll have some really hot stretches and he gets cold for a while. You know, that could change if he's running different routes, but he'll end up being a very good value pick, you know, round five and beyond.
Yeah, Metcalf is an interesting pick because I'm looking at NFC ADP and he's wide receiver six, just after Calvin Ridley and just before Justin Jefferson and A.J. Brown. But in our drafts, I feel like he's more of a third-round pick. I'm just looking at one we did a few weeks ago. He went in the third round. He went after A.J. Brown, after Michael Thomas, after Keenan Allen, and just before Terry McLaurin. And it seems like that is sort of a tier right there, ending with Metcalf and McLaurin or something like that. And then after that, you've got, you know, your Allen Robinsons, your Bucks wide receivers and whatnot. But, you know, NFC ADP has Metcalf at the beginning of the tier, basically, and in our draft seems like he's at the end of the tier. Maybe that's because we're more of a full PPR default, and NFC is half.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting range because Metcalf, Jefferson, and Brown, they're all very similar players in terms of, you know, they're, I guess, Jefferson and Brown, you can see being more true alpha wide receivers, whereas, you know, Heath and I at least think Metcalf's going to split targets more, but they're not going to be the 140, 150 target guys, most likely.
A little respect to Julio Jones, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Sure. Yes, that's fair.
Yeah.
But I do still think A.J. Brown's going to get more targets than him. But yes, that's fair.
That's interesting. So you think you think he's going to get more than Jones, or you think he's going to get more than Metcalf, or both?
I think Brown's going to get, well, both. Okay. Yes.
All right, let's finish it with that. First of all, A.J. Brown or DK Metcalf, and who gets more targets?
Brown for both for me.
I think Metcalf gets more targets now.
Who are you drafting?
Metcalf and non and half, A.J. Brown and PPR. I think we'll catch the ball more.
I'm drafting A.J. Brown over Metcalf. I have them almost the same targets, but I do think I have Brown at four more.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Tars will be close.
All right. We will take a break. When we come back, why does Heath have Dak Prescott projected for 72 more pass attempts than Chris does? And what the heck's going on with the Tampa Bay passing game? Is it going to be a pretty even split between the top three guys in terms of targets? We'll talk about that next on Fantasy Football Today. The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we're back to look at the NFC East, and the team we're highlighting is the Dallas Cowboys here. By the way, remember your emails. Hopefully have time for them later. FantasyFootball@CBSi.com. That is the letter I. Please send your emails there, and your Apple Podcasts comments and questions are always appreciated. Leave us a nice 5-star review. All right, so Dak Prescott, the pass attempts are big here, and the production is big. I mean, not only does Heath have Dak projected for 72 more pass attempts than Chris does, he's got him projected for about 800 more yards, only one more touchdown. But this is a big, big difference in projections. Chris, where do you have Dak ranked?
He is QB 5-6, I think.
And Heath, for you?
The same.
He's 7 for me. Sorry, I'm just a little lower.
But I only have him 5 points behind Josh Allen.
Okay, I thought you had him 5th. You have him 5th or 6th?
I have him ranked 5th, yes. In the projections, he's 6th because Russell Wilson's right there with him.
I see. Okay, well, this is noteworthy, right? This is a big thing. This is a big difference here.
Yeah, I think probably like this would be really easily explained, I would guess, that I am leaning more heavily on Dak Prescott's production with Kellen Moore than and largely ignoring Dak Prescott's volume without Kellen Moore.
Chris, is that it?
I think that probably explains at least some of it, but I think the bigger difference in looking at it is I have the Cowboys projected to run like 1,100 plays right around there, 1060. Like, yeah, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but I think Heath has them projected to run about 50 more plays than I do. So that explains a decent amount.
They're all pass plays.
They're all pass plays. Like, if you look at Dak Prescott in 20 games with Kellen Moore calling plays has averaged 40 pass attempts per game.
Right.
And that would be 680 passes over a full season. So I've actually drawn him back a little bit from there.
Yeah,
I'm being conservative.
I think you're being aggressive on the plays run at 1150. I'm at like 1120. So there's that gap. But I think the bigger thing is you have him throwing a couple, you know, a little bit more often. I do think the efficiency numbers are pretty similar. I have him for the same amount of touchdowns, actually fewer interceptions, and a similar yards per attempt. I think it comes down to pass attempts, really. That's the biggest difference. And I could definitely see the scenario where they lead the NFL in pass attempts, and I would imagine you probably have them leading the NFL by a significant margin here. Oh, tied with Tampa Bay. Okay. I don't know. I could see that happening, but I have him 4th in pass attempts. So I think maybe it's just you have a little more pass volume overall for the league than
I do. I find it interesting that you're pretty far off on the stats in terms of 800 passing yards, 70 or 80 rushing yards. And about 60 rushing yards, 1.5 rushing touchdowns, and yet you're not that far off in the rankings. So what does that mean overall about your quarterback
projections. Chris, just
100% a tier thing for it's a tier discussion for me. I like I said, I've got Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, and Dak Prescott within 4.5 fantasy points of each other.
Yeah.
The next quarterback after Dak Prescott is like 30 points behind him.
Okay.
I do wonder if maybe since you seem to be higher on quarterbacks overall, you know, last season was a historic season for passing. But that was at least somewhat heavily weighted towards early in the season when there were much, much more high scoring offensive games. There were much more high passing yardage games and it kind of settled down. It might just be that I'm regressing a little more for, you know, passing yardage in general as well. But one thing I wanted to look at, you know, Dallas, obviously, Dak Prescott was on pace for, what, 6,000 passing yards last season? Mm-hmm. In the 4.5, 4.75 games he played, let's call it 5. He was never going to throw, you know, he was on pace for also like 700 pass attempts or something completely ridiculous.
About 50 a game.
And they were a very pass-heavy team in those 5 games. But actually, if you look at the situation neutral, so when the score was 7 points either way, between 7 points trailing or 7 points up, they were 10th in pass rate at 59% in neutral situations, which is that's high, but it's not necessarily as high as it seems based on the total yardage and pass attempts. So, you know, they were playing from behind a lot. Their defense was, you know, pretty historically awful in those first 5 games. So, you know, that does weight the numbers a little bit. And it's hard to know what an Andy Dalton-led offense can tell us about a Dak Prescott-led offense. I would guess not very much. But I am assuming a little more regression to being, you know, a pass-heavy team, but not so dramatically, I guess.
Yeah, I've got him at 56.7% pass rate.
Yeah, I'm at 54.
Okay, I just want to clarify, just correct a number that I gave. I said about 50 pass attempts per game. That was in his first 4 games. If you factor in the 5th game, it's 44 pass attempts per game for Dak Prescott. All right, Jamie, you want to add anything on Dak, or you want to go to the Bucs guys?
I mean, the Cowboys are about to be the most overdrafted fantasy players that we're going to see this year because they're going to be on Hard Knocks, and they're already very, very exciting to begin with already. So, you know, I think Dak could push himself into the top 3 if he looks great. I think Zeke is going to push himself back into the top 5 if he continues to have these wonderful workout videos that everybody keeps falling in love with. The receivers are obviously very exciting to begin with as well. Hopefully Amari Cooper's healthy. This is going to be a great offense. You know, if that line is right, you know, the Cowboys are going to be all drafted in the top Cowboys are probably all going to be drafted in the first 4 rounds.
Yeah. And then Gallup, maybe round 9 or so. And that brings us to Tampa Bay, another team that should have a great offense, maybe the best in football, look like the best team in football. Fair to say? Are they your Super Bowl favorites right now?
No. Chiefs.
Yeah, I'd still say Chiefs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they're the NFC favorites. Can we say that?
They are. Yeah. Vegas has said so as well.
Rematch. Oh, I know what Vegas says. You guys have more credibility than those guys. Okay, anyway, the wide receivers. I'm going to give Jamie the first word here, but I'll just lay it out. I'll just give targets. Heath has Godwin at 117, Evans at 123, and Brown at 117. So that's they're all within 6, and Godwin and Brown with the same amount of targets. Chris has Godwin at 114, Evans at 111, and Brown at 97. So you have Brown clearly third. Jamie, do you think it will? What do you think overall? Do you think it'll be close in targets? Does that mean that the best value is actually going to be Antonio Brown? Like, give me your quick little breakdown here of the Bucs wide receivers.
The best value is Antonio Brown. I mean, because if he plays, you know, the majority of the season, you know, he's clearly got still the talent enough to be one of Tom Brady's go-to guys. He showed that in his, you know, short stint at the end of the regular season before he got hurt going into the playoffs or in the playoffs. This is a great receiving core. And, you know, you factor in the tight ends, it's hard not to spread the ball around. They finally have a pass-catching running back that they're going to use that they didn't have last year to the same level of what Giovanni Bernard is compared to Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones. This is just a buffet for Tom Brady that he's going to feast on. And it's going to be unfortunate for fantasy managers, I think, because you know, you're going to fall in love with the names, and Mike Evans with his consecutive streak of 1,000 yards seasons and double-digit touchdowns that he just had last year, and Godwin with all the hype that he had last year and still showed you some of that promise, and obviously Antonio Brown's resume. So value-wise, Antonio Brown's fantastic, but I still think Godwin's the best Bucs wide receiver. I would hope he gets not significantly more targets than the group, but enough that he stays healthy and hopefully gets a big contract that he didn't get this year because of the circumstances. So I still like Godwin the best. I will draft him over Evans. Evans is somebody I tend to avoid just because he's going too high, in my opinion. And Brown is somebody, if I get him in the right spot, I'll certainly take a chance on him, which is, you know, somewhere in the round eight range.
You'd rather have him than Michael Gallup?
That's a great question. I probably would rather have Antonio Brown.
And Evans currently is 41st in ADP and Godwin 46th. So do those, I know you like Godwin better, but independently, you know, do they feel like decent values? We're talking round four here.
It's the right spot that they should start to go. And it's format specific because half and non-PPR, I think Evans' ceiling is higher because of the touchdown potential. You know, Godwin just hasn't shown you that yet. But in PPR, I think Godwin's better. Half PPR, you can make a, you know, you're splitting hairs, I think, on those two guys.
I do think they're both being a little overdrafted, at least based on my projections. I have them 21st and 22nd. So, you know, but I think they're both pretty close. But
yeah, Evans is wide receiver 14 and Godwin's 18. So that would be
Evans
way.
Is 14 overall wide receiver.
Right.
Yeah. And, yeah. And that's why.
I think we're having a little bit of internet issues or just talking over it. I don't know. That was weird. Yeah. Was that technology or just human error?
I thought Chris's internet was going in and out.
I thought so. Yeah.
Okay. I think my internet's yeah.
Okay. go ahead. Heath, you're up.
Yeah. Yes. I have Godwin and Evans both in my bus column just because of that wide receiver 14 and wide receiver 18. I don't like it. I wrote about that in the column is that, it doesn't feel comfortable saying wide receivers that talented on an offense that we expect to be that good, but it was just so even between them and Brown. And you know, Brady's going to throw at least 20% of his passes to running backs, and OJ Howard and Rob Gronkowski are going to score a bunch of touchdowns. So I just, unless Tom Brady's just the best quarterback in fantasy, I think it's going to be a problem.
And he was, as I mentioned, the last seven games? I think it was, yeah, number three quarterback in fantasy last year. Now, let's take a look at these numbers for all of them in Antonio Brown's first seven games. He played eight games. Mike Evans got hurt very early in the eighth. So we'll eliminate that. That was week 17. Let's just take a look at the splits. Brady was on pace for 4,674 yards and 37 touchdowns. Evans was on pace for 135 targets. He was by far the best of the group. 135 targets, 1,342 yards, and 14 touchdowns. That was Evans. Godwin was on pace for 80 catches on 110 targets, 978 yards, and 7 touchdowns. Brown was on pace for only 3 fewer targets, only 2 fewer catches than Godwin, but almost 200 fewer yards, 789 yards compared to 978, and 5 touchdowns. So Evans was a superstar worthy of a second round pick, basically, in those seven games. Godwin, 80 catches, 978 yards, 7 touchdowns. Brown on pace for 78 catches, 789, and 5. The numbers, by the way, are a lot better if you eliminate the first game. They just really, they had a crappy game. They lost 38-3 against New Orleans. And then after that, Tom Brady just went off. It was 3 or 4 touchdowns, basically, every game. But that's how it played out last year. Evans with a big advantage over both of them, and it will be a
something
very
that
tough
complicates
choice.
That Evans was pretty mediocre in the playoffs, or at least super underwhelming. He had 22 targets, 204 yards, so 9.3 yards per target is pretty good, but only 204 yards in 4 playoffs.
I don't know. Well, no, didn't he miss the first game or no? I always forget. I know he got hurt in week 17.
Godwin, I think Godwin and Brown maybe missed
Brown
one
missed
game.
Game.
Brown
for
definitely
sure.
missed
okay. Brown
one.
Missed the game.
But no, Evans played at least 81% of the snaps. He got his usual role in that stretch.
I don't
and even,
think he was healthy, though. That's the thing.
Even those last seven games, I mean, it was a lot of touchdowns, and it was a couple of really big games, but he also had 3 straight games with 56 yards or fewer. The thing with Evans was, early in the season especially, he looked like a souped up Julius Thomas or something. He was playing like a tight end. It was a lot of touchdowns, but like 50 yards per game early on. And then it took him and Brady some time to get on the same page, but it finally did happen. Brady was really effective on the deep ball late in the season, and that made Mike Evans much better. If they can carry over that second half momentum into this season, then we're all going to be too low on Mike Evans because
we usually are.
What's that?
We often are. I mean, this guy, people have doubts about him a lot, and he just always, at the end of the day, just the numbers are there. And he was second in the NFL in green zone targets, and he was like sixth in red zone targets last year.
The thing that I struggle with is, one, when the games are most important and your production flags like that, you know, what does that tell me? And it doesn't tell me anything bad about Mike Evans. What it tells me is that Tom Brady is such a good quarterback that he's never going to force the ball to one guy. He's going to spread the ball around as much as he can, and that's going to lead to inconsistencies for all three of these guys, I think. Evans and Godwin, they feel like high floor players. It doesn't feel like they're going to bust and be some huge season ruining disappointment for your team. It's just when you're talking about that 14 to 20 range at wide receiver, there are other guys I prefer who might have a little more room to grow and exceed that price. But in terms of players who are most likely to make a return on investment, I think they're right up there in that group, which is, it's, you know, what you're looking for when you're building your team, I suppose.
Well, here's one
I'm
thing.
I'm kind of at the point where Brady's the only player on the Bucs offense that I really want for fantasy. Everyone else, I don't want any part of the running backs unless I can get them dirt cheap. And unless it's Antonio Brown, you know, the price for everyone else, just, it feels hard to get a profit on any of those players.
Except for Brown.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't hate Antonio Brown so much because I would draft him a lot, but he will never be on any of my fantasy teams. But I would recommend him.
Maybe Gio Bernard.
I would recommend Antonio Brown to the listeners because, he's an injury to Evans or Godwin away from being a great value for getting him in the 9th round or 8th round or whatever it might be. All right. So let's read some emails. Emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. This is from Kojo from Ghana. All right. He says, "Dear spicy Italian on ciabatta, pulled pork with coleslaw, and meatball subs, the indisputable top three sandwiches." No, but I like the passion. In my two leagues, what's that?
Like a burger?
No, stop. I'm not falling for it. In my two leagues last year, I drafted McCaffrey at 101 and Sanders at 301 in a 10-team league. And mix at Superflex and Mixon at 112 and Drake at 201 in a 12-team league half PPR. Yahoo gave both of my drafts A's, but I'm sure, as you can imagine, both seasons ended up being trash with McCaffrey and Sanders in one league and Mixon and Drake in the other. Can you talk me down off the zero RB ledge for this year? Jamie, can you talk Kojo down from the zero RB ledge?
So he wants to go a different route.
Well, he's thinking about going zero RB because running back worked out so poorly for him last year.
Yeah. I mean, look, injuries, you know, played a part, obviously, in McCaffrey one. What was it? Drake and who?
McCaffrey and Sanders in one league and Mixon and Drake in the other.
Yeah, so another injury situation with Mixon. I think that, you know, what we're going to see a lot of is, you know, I don't know if you want to call it modified zero RB or just, you know, just taking one running back early, but that seems to be the safest route because if you can get one of your top 10, top 12, top 15 running backs in the first two rounds, whoever that might be for you, whatever rank list you follow, and then you just start, you know, getting your wide receivers or tight ends or quarterbacks in somewhere in rounds 1 through 5, that seems to be a safer approach if you want to avoid the volatility of what the running backs have been. So pick the running back you like, depending on what draft choice you're at, and then just, you know, take some of those high-end wide receivers or a tight end or quarterback.
Yeah. Kojo, I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. This is from Rufus.
You can find a better sandwich.
Every year we draw names, and the order of names is in the order in which we get to decide our draft position. It is non-PPR, 6 points for all touchdowns. What do you think is the ideal draft position in a 12-team non-PPR league?
I mean, historically, it's first overall.
Except for last year.
Yeah, historically, first overall tends to have the highest win rate. And I think we all think Christian McCaffrey is significantly better than everyone else. So I would say 1-1.
Yeah.
It's boring. It's not, it's the chalk take, but sometimes you don't have to overcomplicate things when you got a player like Christian McCaffrey at 1-1.
I agree with Chris. Anybody disagree?
I'd probably go 3. Just because you're going to get one of Cook or Henry, which is still pretty good. And then you get an earlier pick before one.
Yeah. But does that matter? Do you need... Because you also get an earlier third round pick, obviously, if you have the 1-1 instead of 1-3. And actually, I bring that up because he's interested in getting either Waller or Kittle in round 3. And those two picks might make a difference in that regard. You know, Waller, Kittle might be available at 3-1 and not 3-3. That's obviously just speculation. You never know. But that's, you know, that he wants to try to get Waller or Kittle in round 3. So with that as a consideration, Jamie, would you stick with the third pick or would you go with the first?
Yeah, just because non-PPR, I want to get, you know, more running back capital and you have a better chance of still getting a top 15 caliber running back in the, you know, the 21st pick, 22nd pick, whatever it is.
22nd.
As opposed to hoping that I get one of the tight ends in the early part of round 3.
All right. Next email is from Carl from a Canadian city south of Whistler. We'll ask Dave at a later date. Dear Ricky, Ronnie.
Will you actually ask Dave?
No. Ricky, Ronnie, Lamar, and Reggie.
Dolphins running backs, right?
Yep.
Yeah. 12-team standards. They had Reggie. I don't even remember. Reggie Bush
had like 2,000-yard seasons for the Dolphins.
I think. Why do I not remember that? That's strange.
Yeah, Reggie was good. Ricky was a monster at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was great for them.
Ronnie and Ricky was the Wildcat.
12-team standard scoring keeper league. We can keep three
Lamar
players.
Lamar went to a crappy school.
Did you see this? All this endorsement stuff with the college?
It's awesome.
It's weird.
It's so awesome.
It's
maybe I'm showing my age. I thought it was Lamar Smith.
No, it's Lamar Thomas. It's Lamar Miller.
Lamar Smith is. I covered the Dolphins Colts playoff game. One of the loudest stadiums I've ever seen. Certainly in
44 carries or something in that game.
Yeah, he was just a beast in overtime.
12-team standard scoring keeper league. We can keep three players max for 3 years max. So help me pick three. I have the 11th pick. McCaffrey in the first, standard scoring. Tyreek Hill in the second. Waller in the third. Diggs in the fifth. Robert Woods in the 12th. And Dak in the 14th. He needs just three of them. He can keep them for up to 3 years. McCaffrey in the first, Tyreek Hill in the second, Waller in the third, Diggs in the fifth, Woods in the 12th, and Prescott in the 14th. And remember, it is non-PPR.
I feel like we just dodged a terrible Azer take on the college.
I'll get back to it.
I'd like to circle back around on that at some point.
But, no problem.
McCaffrey, Diggs, and Dak for me. McCaffrey, Diggs, and Dak.
So he keeps him at a first-round cost for 3 years in a row?
McCaffrey, yeah.
Diggs, pick 11 this year.
True. And Diggs in the fifth and Prescott in the 14th.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to get the circumstances. So, but it's at that value for 3 years in a row.
I guess so.
Yeah, I think it's McCaffrey, Diggs, and Dak.
I would go McCaffrey, Waller, and Diggs.
Okay. No, I think it's going to be very anti-competitive. I think it's going to be...
Because if there's one thing college football is known for...
Yeah, it's going to be even worse.
Enormous parity.
It's going to be even worse.
We're going to have the same two teams in the national championship every year?
It's going to be even worse. Thankfully, they're going to...
It's a little hypocritical.
Hypocritical?
For a UM fan to get mad about teams being uber competitive while compensating players.
It's ridiculous. UM is going to benefit from this. They just had a company sign on
Adam, we've been hearing UM was going to be good for like 20 years.
I didn't say they were going to be good. I said they're going to benefit from
this. They've been paying their players for longer than that.
Yeah, they don't actually. They lose players to SEC programs that pay more. That's what they say. That's what a reporter says. American top teams plans $540,000 NIL commitment to Miami. So they are willing to give every player at Miami the same amount of money. And if every player opts in, that will cost 500. That would cost 500. No, this is a bad. I don't like this. This is bad for the competitiveness. No, I'm happy that the players are getting paid. I don't care if they get paid, but they got to figure out a way to do it so that it doesn't just make the rich get. That it just doesn't make
let him get his bad take
the rich get richer. This is going to be anti-competitive for college football.
Rich. They're not rich.
I don't mean that way. I mean that the schools, the best schools, are going to be the best at this. And they're going to say, come to Alabama. We've got all these endorsements lined up. Of course that's going to happen. This is not fair for FIU.
I don't think you have to worry about UM dominating anyone. It's okay.
It's very frustrating to have conversations with you when you say things like that. All right, here we go. Tucker from Rhode Island. Dear Sean, Roger, Timothy, and Pierce, and those are James Bonds. I'm in a 7-year running 10-team, 2-quarterback league with 3 wide receivers and 3 flex. I have McCaffrey. I pick 101. I'm going to take McCaffrey. I can keep up to 4 players. I'm going to keep Diggs in the third. So give me 3 more. Let's see. Are there any other? Okay. Here we go. Well, he's giving us like all of his keepers. All right, he needs 3 more. He's going to keep Jefferson and Herbert in the 9th and 10th rounds. All right, so he needs 1 more. Keenan Allen in the 2nd round. David Montgomery in the 4th. Latavius in the 8th. Goddard in the 10th. And Connor in the 13th. Mayfield in the 16th. It is a 2 QB league. So that's interesting.
Mayfield.
Yeah, it's Mayfield.
Yeah, I guess.
That's a free spot.
Mayfield it is. Good. I don't feel like disagreeing with people anymore. We're out of here. Thanks for listening, everybody. We got AFC projections coming up later. Coming up, we're recording it later today, but you will hear it on Wednesday. We have a live listener mock draft that you will hear on Thursday. It's going to be a fun week here on Fantasy Football Today. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.